I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who was good. I would call her. Wish I had a round and a half with a sack, 6-point baller.
I'm totally putting that in the outtakes.
Oh, were you recording? I didn't know you were recording that.
Ghost Hunting in New England.
Your favorite spooky podcast.
Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to season 4 of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts Amelia
and Beth.
Happy birthday
to me.
You. Happy birthday, Beth. This is an extra special anniversary of Beth's. No, wait, what's it called?
It is. It's my annual 25th birthday.
It is. Yeah. So happy birthday, Beth.
Thanks.
Just so ecstatic. Do you have any big plans for your birthday?
Well, typically I like to go over to the Punjab Cafe in Quincy and sit there and eat all the Indian food, but it's a pandemic, so maybe I'll get takeout instead.
They're excellent.
They are. They're so good. I love them.
And when you ask for your food spicy there, they make it unbelievably spicy. It was your 38th birthday I went with you, and Brendan and I both really...
There's no 38. There's only 25.
I'm sorry. I can't believe I said that. So I think a couple of years ago, we went and I got the really spicy stuff and they're like, how spicy do you want it? And I was like, as spicy as you can make it. And then I like almost started hallucinating. It was so spicy, but it was great. I gave it to Brendan and he was like, whoa.
Well, Sean and I went there one night and we had been like slowly ramping up. Like we would get medium, medium, medium plus and then hot. And then one night we were like, let's get extra hot. And we could have sworn that they were like peeking out the door at us, looking at like, can they actually eat it? And you better believe we ate every bite of those plates because they weren't going to beat us. I have not ordered extra hot since then. It was brutal.
I haven't there since then either, but they do. They do a fantastic job. So
Bobby at 9, 10, and now 11 years old will order his food there extra hot. And he loves it. Absolutely loves it.
Yummy, yummy.
Yeah, I just think he's a sadist. What? No. When it's to yourself, it's a masochist, right?
Yes.
Sadism is hurting other people.
I think so.
Okay.
So, Beth, are you super excited for season 4?
I am.
Me too.
I'm really looking forward to the vampire episode.
Yes, we have one on the Strigoi.
Because Amelia is now Russian.
Well, Strigoi is from Romania, so we will learn all about it.
Eastern Europe. Yeah, Russia's in Eastern Europe too. Amelia is now Eastern European.
Anyway.
I'm cutting that part out.
Yeah, I would.
Maybe I'll just have you singing that weird song right there.
Yeah, so we have a very exciting season ahead, filled with all kinds of great, fun, interesting things. We have some cool guests who are going to come on.
Mm-hmm.
Have some all different kinds of fun stuff. So, yeah. Have you been doing anything exciting since season 3 ended, Beth?
I've been sitting in my house a lot, nice. Wearing a lot of Halloween-themed leggings.
I didn't wear these because of that, but hold on. People at home can't see, but Beth can see.
Oh, she's wearing candy corn leggings.
I didn't even do that on purpose. It's just what I put on this morning.
Just because they're comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's Wednesday.
There you go.
And we have, not to say that we have favorites in our guests or anything, but we do have one of our very favorite recurring guests coming today. Just kind of waiting for him to
He's our only recurring guest, so we can definitely call him our favorite recurring guest.
We've had other guests on multiple times.
Not for interviews.
Okay. So he's our favorite recurring guest.
Yay!
Because he gives such great predictions. And I'm super excited because tonight he is going to talk with us about birth charts. And we're going to talk about all the different, is it the zodiac, like sun, the moon, the rising, all that stuff, the skinny dip, whatever. Like I don't know what any of it means other than my birthday's in February. And so I'm an Aquarius.
February 3rd tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So for those of you, if you didn't
catch in on it based on what we've been talking about. Tim Rican is our guest tonight.
Oh, so, I didn't mention his name.
No, he didn't. So yeah, we're really looking forward to it. He'll be joining us in a minute. Mm-hmm. And like Beth said, we're going to be going over birth charts tonight. Yes. All the hidden meanings inside of it. What's your, where's your Venus? Where's your, what in Virgo? I just said that because my Venus is in Virgo. But we're specifically going, that's why I'm so nutty. We're specifically going over Beth's birth chart tonight a little. Mm-hmm. Because it is a big anniversary of her yearly 25th birthday.
Right. It's huge. You know? Other than that, what have you been doing during the gap in time between season 3 and now?
It feels like I've been doing nothing.
Also just sitting around wearing Halloween leggings?
Sitting around wearing Halloween leggings. I've, you know, been at the store less. I got my first office job. I tell people they have COVID all day. That's my desk job.
She just makes prank calls to people. She doesn't actually get paid or anything. She just refuses to go to work and she just sits around her apartment and dials random numbers. She doesn't even look them up in a phone book or anything. She just punches in 11 numbers and tells the person on the other end, you know, yeah, I just wanted to let you know you have COVID.
No, you have COVID. No, but it's.
And then, yeah, just totally freaks people out. You do it from a hidden number, right?
Yeah.
Did you hear that ding dong?
I didn't, but I can see the screen.
Yay! Tim's here! Without further ado, our very favorite recurring guest, who is officially going to be our season starter every season, it seems like, the wonderful and knowledgeable and oh-so-eloquent Tim Rican.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming.
Yeah.
And we should say a huge congratulations because you got engaged since the last time we spoke to you.
I did. I did. And did indeed on Halloween night. How witchy and appropriate. So, and congratulations to you as well.
Oh, yeah. I guess we haven't talked on the show since then. Yeah. Thank you. This is very exciting. Yes. But here today, we're here to talk about birth charts.
Yes.
So,
and just generally astrology. Sun, okay. Moon, rising, sunset, yeah. Skinny dip, whatever.
Yeah, and this is like my, it's so weird because I think astrology is having like this huge renaissance period right now. And it's like my one of my favorite things in the entire world to talk about too. So I'm like super intensely studying different forms of astrology as well. I'm going for a certification soon, which I'm a little nervous for. And
you'll do great.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm really focused on different forms of astrology because I'm so used to studying modern astrology, which has like that whole Jungian psychology aspect to it. And now I'm switching over to studying more of like Hellenistic ancient medieval astrology, which is totally like changing my perspective on how astrology works. And it's really, really cool. So yeah, I'm super excited.
Nice.
Wow. That's awesome.
Astrology is a really sort of like, I think that everybody has like a very vague notion of what it is, at least, you know, everybody knows like what their own sign is and they can look up their own horoscope in the newspaper. Do people still read newspapers? Sorry. On their app, whatever it is.
On horoscope.com.
Yeah, on whatever. Yeah. And but other than that, I have to say like, I don't know anything. Like I think that in Chinese astrology, I'm a rooster.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Yeah. That is a whole field that I know absolutely nothing about is the Chinese astrology. It's really cool and interesting, mm-hmm. kind of like Vedic astrology, which is another form of astrology. But those are so beyond my mind working through that type of astrology. I'm used to the tropical astrology, which is kind of like the Western metaphysical, Western cultured astrology, which you know, really stems from the Arabs and the Arabic parts and Middle East. And a lot of it really came to its renaissance during the time of the Library of Alexandria, the Hellenistic period. And it brought about this renaissance of astrology and it's very, very cool. So yeah.
Yeah.
The funny thing is everybody talks about sun sign astrology, which is the horoscopes in the magazines and then the you know, your co-star and all of those apps and everything. Sun sign astrology was really never a thing until the birth of Princess Margaret. Before that.
Like from the crown, Princess Margaret?
Yeah, Princess Margaret. It was all based sun sign astrology and horoscopes, the crown. That's good. That's a good reference to it.
Well, I mean, that's what I know about Princess Margaret.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wait, Amelia, I watched The Crown while we were between seasons too.
I know you did, Beth.
From now on, instead of thinking of just Princess Margaret, I'm going to go Princess Margaret from The Crown. Like, that's my new thing.
Sorry.
But yeah, sun sign astrology was not really a thing. Horoscopes and sun sign astrology is really a more modern thing. Back in traditional astrology, your rising sign is really the more important aspect of your chart or of your horoscope. And it shows, like, if you view your rising sign as being what you present to the world, like if you walk into a room when people first are introduced to you, how they perceive you, that would be your rising sign, which is always placed in your first house, the house of the self. The sun sign is kind of like your inner workings, more of who you are internally. Okay. So I guess it makes sense to look at the sun sign as who you are internally. And then you have your moon sign, which is more of like your emotional side. And your moon sign represents, for a person in your chart, represents your mother, and your sun represents your father, and how they move through the different houses. It's actually really, really cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are the houses? Let's pretend that all I know is that I'm an Aquarius and I can look it up in the paper.
Yeah. Okay. So if you look at the heavens and how the planets go around the earth or cycle around the earth, from our perspective, it's a 360 degree circle. Mm-hmm. And if you divide that evenly, and there's different house systems. And when I say house systems, there's whole house systems. There's a system called Placidus, which is probably the most common for anybody who's gone on astro.com or CoStar or one of those apps. I use whole sign houses, which divides that 360 degree circle into 12, 30 degree little triangles or pizza pies or pieces of pie. And each one of those has a specific purpose in your life, or a specific area that it influences. And depending on what zodiac sign is in one of those houses, and the planets that are connected to those zodiac signs are in the wheel as well, gives you a very specific idea of how you interact with the world and how the world interacts with you. And it's very accurate in a lot of ways. The really cool thing about astrology, unlike some of the other divinatory things like tarot or palmistry or I Ching or one of those things, is there is 5,000 years worth of information that talks about if you have the Mercury in Gemini in the third house, it really goes into detail because they've seen this for, you know, thousands of years and said, when this conjunction happens or when this house is, you know, intensified by this planet, this is the reaction that we've seen. So it has a little bit more of a scientific value to it. It is an art form. And I think a lot of people have difficulty with the idea of astrology because of that whole concept of fate. If we're looking at these planets, is it fated that we do these exact things? Or is it, do we have free will? And how do you balance that out? And that's something that I think we all have to look at and try to figure out ourselves. I perceive it as these are opportunities. These are our potentials and areas that could be affected. And astrology gives me the ability to say, I don't like that. I'm going to change it. I'm going to look at this and say, this is a possibility in my life. Let me, you know, take a step to the left and shift my life up so that I'm not dealing with that type of situation any longer. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, definitely.
Very, very cool. And we all have a planet that is like the significant planet in our chart. And it's called the helmsman, kind of like if you view that wheel, the chart that I was talking about, mm-hmm. as being like a boat wheel, there's a planet that steers your boat wheel and tells you, hey, this is the planet that controls you. It has a strong signature in your chart. And that's based off of your rising sign.
So when you talk about like this, what did you just call it? I'm sorry. Like the helmsman of the chart?
Yep.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm confused. Is that the same as when you have like one planet a lot of times in your chart?
No. So that's each planet only shows up in your chart once, but there are multiple signs. So yes. That's rising sign is Cancer. Which is
that sounds terrible.
No, it's actually not bad. That's actually a good thing. It's a very good thing. And it's ruled by the moon, which is a very emotional aspect to it. It has a very emotional part of it. So the moon is the planet or the luminary that rules over your entire chart. Now, what I think you're talking about, Amelia, is if you have a lot of planets in one sign. So like right now, Beth being an Aquarius, which is really interesting, almost every planet is going to be in the sign of Aquarius in the month of February. And this hasn't happened since 1961, 1962. Yeah, end of 1961, beginning of 1962. And it's not all of the planets. I only work with the seven inner planets and not the outer planets that were discovered much later in the 1800s and early 1900s. I only work with, the planets that correspond to the days of the week. So, you know, Sunday is the day of the sun, Monday is the day of the moon, Tuesday, Mars, Wednesday, Mercury, Thursday, Jupiter, Friday, Venus, and Saturday, Saturn. So those are the planets that I prefer to work with because they move fast enough, or there's some that are slow. Saturn and Jupiter are slow, but they move at a speed and a pace that affects us. Whereas Neptune, Uranus, Pluto are more generational. They move so slow that you wouldn't even notice if there was changes in your chart to the planets moving. Do you know what I mean? Like it's such a generational thing, which is like where we get the age of Aquarius, which just happened or begins to happen this past December 21st, when Jupiter and Saturn kind of conjoined. It switched
over. Oh, with the Christmas star.
The Christmas star. Yep.
Yeah.
It actually relates to the Star of Bethlehem. That happens every 200 to 240 years, but that conjunction happens every 20 years. But this one is significant because it went from the sign of an earth sign, Taurus, into the sign of Aquarius. And Aquarius, so for the next 200 and some odd years, it's going to be in air signs. So it went from 200 and some odd years being Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn. Now we're going to do another 200 to 240 years of Aquarius, Gemini, Libra, kind of bouncing around between those for a conjunction, and it brings about an error. So when it was in earth signs are all about stability, and specifically Taurus is about the senses, the way things smell, taste, feel, high thread count on your sheets, and that kind of thing. And physical things, money, home, food, to now we're going into this
tactile.
Now we're going into this period of Aquarius, which is all about intellectual property and the way we think and revolution. And Aquarius is that sign. I mean, listen to the song. You know, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. It's about, you know, the freedom of mind and the freedom of everything else. Like we went from physical money and money exchange to now we're talking about Bitcoin. And as soon as this conjunction happened, did anybody else notice that Bitcoin went the highest it's ever gone in the history of Bitcoin? During this conjunction, it's showing these transitions from like this structured place to a little bit more of a thinking and thought process and non-physical, more thought and more imagination and you know, freedom of the mind. And also I like to tell people all the time, Aquarius, it is an air sign, but it's a water carrier. And air is, within astrology, considered masculine, but water is considered feminine. And when we look at those two things balancing out each other, it's kind of the age of the genderless too. So we have a lot of these like revolutionary ideas coming up during the next, you know, 20 years until we go into the next sign of air. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel like I'm rambling about things because I get so excited.
No, it's awesome. I love it. Yeah. I love hearing about it.
I'm like taking notes so that I'll remember what these things are later.
Yeah. I know. I printed out my birth chart as we were talking so I could like try to follow along.
Very nice. Very nice. Awesome. Yeah.
Wait, is there somewhere you can just like go online and plug in your stuff and it just prints it out for you? Or
absolutely. Astro.com offers free birth charts and you can do your transits on there. You can do all of those things. It's very easy. There's also a couple of apps on phones that I tend to use too. So,
okay.
I used an app on the phone and it gave me the wrong rising sign because I always was told on the app, I thought I was an Aries rising. And I was like very proud of it and I was very happy. But then I had my chart done by Aliza Kelly, who's this astrologer who I'm obsessed with. I love her. She does all the work for like Cosmopolitan and stuff.
Yeah.
And I found out I'm a Pisces rising.
Oh, very nice.
Which I guess is probably cooler, but I was so sure I was an Aries.
Yeah. It's like finding out you were adopted. No, like, wait a second. I thought this was all true about me, but it's not.
For years, my mother told me that I was born at 11:04 a.m. Mm. And it was actually 11:04 p.m. when I ended up getting my birth records. And it totally screwed up my chart. And I had to like come to this realization, I'm a Sagittarius rising. And for years, I thought I was an Aries rising. And I was like, this is shocking to me. But now looking at the chart, it totally makes way more sense for me to be a Sagittarius rising than an Aries rising. Because, you know, I don't have that go into the room and have that like, I don't want to say aggressive, but like very forward, very, you know, aggressive thing. I do have that Jupiterian Sagittarius thing where I'm a little bit more bubbly, a little bit more, hi, how are you? Or nice to see you. I try to have more of an upbeat, optimistic thing, which is what Sagittarius tends to do. But Pisces, that has a very like natural, intuitive feeling to it. It has, you know, you're good at being able to have a good BS monitor, and you can walk into a room and really go, yeah, I'm going to like these people. Oh, I'm not going to like these people. Oh, that person's a liar. And this person, like you, I don't want to say that you're judgmental, but you have this natural.
You can say it.
Really like look at what people are doing and saying, you know what I mean? And really be able to read through and get to the core of things. Pisces also rules over the feet. And if your rising sign is Pisces, it means it's in your first house, which is the house of your, you know, your appearance and yourself and how you interact with people and your style. But it also has a little bit to do with some of your vitality and some of your health stuff. So you may want to take a look at like, am I spending too much time on my feet? Am I hurting my feet? Are they, there's a sensitivity to feet.
So it is so interesting you say that, because I have neuropathy in my feet. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know this was connected, but because I gave myself a B6 poisoning. And now I have like permanent nerve damage in my feet.
Poisoning, that's a thing?
It is a thing, yeah. So what I did is I tried to overcompensate with my B6 and my B12 because I'm vegan and I've been vegan a very long time. A lot of times vegans don't get those. So, and I was on the keto diet, which you can use a lot of nutritional yeast in. So I was getting like 400 times more than you're supposed to get a B6 every day for like 4 months. And I had to see a neurologist for a while about it.
What are some of the other symptoms? Because I take B6 and B12 and a B complex because I'm a vegetarian. I've been taking those a lot since I've become a vegetarian, and I've noticed some things and I'm like, oh, this is a little interesting, but I had no idea that there was poisoning to it. So
yeah, you can't get it from B12. It's just B6. And like the big thing is neuropathy in your feet.
Interestingly enough, I have a sprained ankle or something going on, and I don't know how it happened. So I wonder if that's nerve issues and neuropathy. Good to know.
Yeah. If you're ever like laying down in bed and all of a sudden you feel like your feet are on fire.
Yeah.
Stop taking it.
Stop taking it. Okay. Good to know. Noted.
Okay. So when we look at Beth's chart, what is her moon?
Beth's moon is in the eighth house in the sign of Aquarius. And actually I wrote down a whole bunch of stuff that I noted about her and her sign. So let's see what we have here. So she's in the eighth house. You sometimes can be a little bit, and if I say anything that's too personal or upsetting, stop.
And we'll edit it out.
Yeah, okay. Perfect.
You kidding? I'll just hang up on you.
You do tend to be a relatively sensitive person, and this may be due to relationships or be caused by relationships due to a mother figure. Mother is the moon in the chart. You also have, because it's in the eighth house, is the house of death and taxes and...
Oh, all those fun things.
Inheritance, money that's not yours, but it also is that area of conceptualizing death, right? And you do have quite a bit in the eighth house. So there's a lot of those areas, which isn't bad. It's not a bad thing, but it's also ruled by Aquarius. Your eighth house is Aquarius. You prefer to joke about things that are uncomfortable. You prefer to put a spin on things that are uncomfortable because that's what Aquarius does with the moon there. But you're also very analytical because Aquarius is a fixed sign and it's an air sign. You're very analytical about things, but you tend to internalize a lot of that, and your outward expression of it tends to be much more, I'm going to make this into a joke so that it makes me feel less uncomfortable about being emotional.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And it's not a bad thing. It's nothing negative. It's just that's what you tend to do. You also have a strong, Aquarius does have that, you know, outside the norm aspect. So there's a strong feeling of like studying metaphysical things. So I thought that was really interesting as well, since you two are very invested in, you know, looking into spirit communication and connection with spirits. Aquarius being in that eighth house of death makes you somebody that's very interested in the study of metaphysics and the afterlife. And that's, and I think that plays perfectly into who you are and the, and just what I know of you based on our podcast interactions. I thought it really fit your personality really well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
The really cool thing about your chart too is you are mostly, almost every one of your planets, not all of them, but a lot of your planets are in fixed signs. There's three types of signs. There's three types of signs. There are cardinal signs, which are like the go-getters. I'm going to start something, but I don't always finish it. Like the artist that has a million projects going and they start them, but they don't always get to them. Mm-hmm. And then there's the fixed signs that are the like, stable, steady, I'm going to continue to do things and work through them. And I'm going to see this project all the way through. Not always the fastest at doing things, but definitely the ones that are like slow and steady wins the race. Mm-hmm. And then there's the mutable signs that are, oh, maybe I'll do it. Maybe I won't do it. Maybe I'll work on a little bit of this. Maybe I'll put it aside for a bit. They're kind of ambivalent to everything. You know what I mean?
Wishy-washy.
Wishy-washy, yeah. And it doesn't mean a bad thing. The way we get those three types of categories is based on the seasons. So Aries starts the season of spring. So it, gung-ho, it's that energetic aspect. I'm going to get it done. And then it gets to Taurus, which is at the peak of spring. And it's like, I'm doing this and I'm slow and steady and I'm in this place where it doesn't fluctuate. I'm doing well. And then you get over to Gemini and it's going into summertime. So it goes, maybe I'll be spring for a little bit. Maybe I'll be summer for a little bit. So you get that mutable aspect of it. But you tend to be very fixed. So you're somebody that is a slow and steady. I'm going to do this. I'm going to push through. And you have a lot of air in your chart. So you are all in your mind. Over analytical sometimes, probably prone to anxiety a little bit, but you don't show that because a lot of your stuff is in Aquarius and you're like, screw this, I'm just going to make fun of it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's how you deal, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
So I'm an anxious person who makes jokes about stuff that I'm uncomfortable about, and but I get stuff done. You do.
Yeah. You are somebody that's an achiever. Yeah.
If you need something done, like you got a project or something, I'm the person to call because I'll, as much as it kills me, I will see it through to the end.
Yeah. And you also have Jupiter in your fourth house, which is the house of kind of like the most private aspect of who you are. Your home life, your immediate family, your I call it the dark house, right? Like it's the house that nobody else sees other than the people that you're super close to. And you have Jupiter there, which makes you kind of like, you enjoy your home. You enjoy things about your home. You enjoy your family. You would be somebody that would be like, let's buy a house that needs to be revamped or isn't doing that great. And like, let's do the projects to do it. That's the type of personality that Jupiter brings to your fourth house. It has that, I'm going to be comfortable in my home. I'm going to enjoy my home and I'm going to enjoy my family around me. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there any other part of it there that's like, I'm only going to let people that I really want in my house into my
100%, house? 100%. Because you also have Saturn in your fourth house. Saturn is that planet of structure and restriction and those areas. And you are somebody that it's like, when Saturn's there, it's like, this is what I like. This is how I want it. And if you don't fit into that, maybe you're not meant to be here. You know what I mean? But it also brings structure to who you are too. So like you are somebody that needs to have your home in order. And that's however you decide to order it, you know, before you can think of anything outside the house. So if you're going to work and your house is in chaos in some way, it could be your family, it could be, you know, your dogs, it could be something, anything, right? And you're at work, you're going to be thinking about your home the entire time, unless your house is in order because you have Saturn there.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Pets in our chart tend to be in the sixth house, which is really, you know, in traditional astrology, it's the area of your health, but it also is anything that's routined and it's the area of pets too, because we have routines with our pets. So for Beth, you have Sagittarius in the sixth house, which is really, really great. Your sixth house is ruled by Sagittarius, which is that optimistic, you know, ideas. You like the culture. Sagittarius is very into culture and studying of different things. And if that's where your pets are, you are very focused on your pets and knowing everything about your pet and the routines of your pet and that sort of thing too. Yeah. Sagittarius is also ruled by Jupiter. So then we take a look at where your Jupiter is, which is mm-hmm. that the big planet of like happiness. And that goes back to being in your fourth house, which is your home. So your home and Sagittarius in your sixth house, your routines and your pets are all connected to the same planet of Jupiter, which is that place of happiness again. So yeah. Very, very focused on that's what makes you happy.
I like home. I like my cats. And So my cats are the rare kind of cat that gets to go outside. And so I am like obsessed with finding out where they go when they go outside. I have looked into getting like little GPS trackers for their collars to just like track where they go all day. Cause I would just love to know.
That would be awesome. That would totally be awesome.
To have like that map at the end of the day. Like, what did you do over here?
Amelia, where's your sixth house?
So I don't know because I don't know how to read this, actually. Okay. So hold on. I have a chart here. Here's the six. And there's a Leo sign. And then there's four Leos within it.
Yep. So those Leos are just telling you. So you have your south node, your Mars. I can't see what the yellow one is. And your sun. You're a Leo? Your sun sign's Leo?
Yes.
Okay. And Leo is at 4 degrees. The sun's at 4 degrees of Leo, but you have Mars at 25 and nothing is really conjunct. Is that Mercury in the one that's next to the 13? Is that the symbol of Mercury? It looks like a circle with little horns on it with a cross underneath it.
Yep.
So that's the planet of communication. And you have a lot of planets in Leo. You have your sun, Mercury, and Mars in the sixth house. Mars is very important for
war.
The sixth house. The sixth house, well, yeah, it is. Yeah. But the sun is being in Leo is really, really good too, because the ruling planet of Leo is the sun. So that means that it's in its rulership. It's in its place of being happy. So your sun works really, really well there, which means that you probably have a little OCD. The sun is making Leo work really well in that area of routine and structure. You also have Mars there, which tells me that you are somebody that can be a little aggressive or a little forward when you're dealing with, and it relates, the sixth house also has some work related things too. So like when it comes to areas of work, you are a go-getter, like I'm going to take care of this, I'm going to do this. And if somebody breaks the rules or doesn't follow the rules, instead of it being a coaching period or a coaching thing, you could be a little aggressive there.
I'm working on it. It's my goal for 2021. I'm working on it.
Everybody has things they have to take care of, you know.
But Amelia, it's in your chart. You can't get away from it.
It's emotional intelligence. I'm working on it.
Yeah. But
teachable, you know, moments.
And everybody has something that's not going to be great. You know what I mean? In their chart or in their personality. But I think by looking at this stuff, it really gives you the ability to, you know, look at it and review it. The other interesting thing is because you have those routines and those work traits and everything with all those planets in that sixth house, you have Mercury there, which is that planet of communication, which tells me you are very good at communicating. You think about what you say before you say it. You're not a it doesn't mean that you don't have your foot in your mouth type thing. That's not what it means. Mars will make that foot in the mouth. Mars makes a sharp tongue. But having Mercury there tells me that you have a very intellectual communication style. You also enjoy talking about areas of wellness and health and areas that involve, you know, routines and career. So that's not a bad, and pets. So those are all areas that, you know, I feel like you would probably be really good at communicating. You do have to be careful of that Mars kind of sharp tongue thing, though.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And having Mars really close to the sun is not always making Mars comfortable, which makes it a little bit more difficult because Mars is that hot planet and the sun is extremely hot. When the sun's rays are on Mars in your chart, it kind of heats it up a little bit too much to almost what they call combust, which can mean that your anger level could be excessive because the sun is adding more heat to Mars.
You know, we all have areas of growth in our life. I don't know.
I lack emotional understanding. So like I'm one of those people that it takes a movie about like animals to make me cry, but anything else, I'm like, whatever, you know, we all have something, you know what I mean? Like it's, I don't think it's a judgment thing.
It could just be the Prozac, Tim.
Yeah.
Well, it's like you said, we have these things in our chart that, you know, and people always talk about this too, is like, you can't use astrology as your excuse for being a bad person.
Exactly.
Like, you can't use astrology as an excuse for being a jerk. Like, it's something you learn from and then you get better.
Right.
Like, I have a young lady, I have two young ladies. They've been working for me for 3 years. And this year they've been like, you've really been working on yourself.
Good.
Your blood pressure has really dropped. And I'm like, it has. Thank you.
I would love to look at what your transits are to see, like, so when we look at a birth chart, it's a snapshot of where the planets are at that time you took your first breath. Those planets don't, they're not stagnant. They keep moving. And you look at the chart and compare it to what's called your birth chart or your natal chart and see where those planets are or where they're activated. Like what planet is really starting off and what's really focused right now. And Beth, right now, the planet that's the strongest for you is the planet Venus. So then we look at where Venus is in your chart. Yeah. And I will tell you, you have an amazingly placed Venus. Venus is in the sign of Capricorn in the seventh house. Okay. So the seventh house is the house of love, relationships, partnerships, marriage. You are somebody that is definitely looking at that, having Venus in that area. You are somebody that's meant to be in a committed long-term relationship. You are somebody that finds that, seeks that, draws it in. The cool thing about Venus, it has that magnetism to it, right? All the other planets kind of like project things or reach out for things. Venus knows what it wants and just attracts it to it. So you're somebody that is always attracted to wanting to be in a stable relationship and being married and having that sort of thing.
Hey, 15 years seems to be going well so far.
And because Venus is in that place of partnership, and you can look at this as partnership with other areas of your life, but for me, it's really about that committed marriage relationship. Whenever there's disagreements or fights within your relationship, because Venus is there, they're short-lived. They're not long-term that stretch on for like months and months and months. They're something that's very short and very quick. Your marriage or your relationship before marriage may have taken a long time to progress because it's in the sign of Capricorn. So it's kind of like a slow and steady before it's like, yay, let's jump in and get married. And also because Venus is in Capricorn, you can come off early on in dating and in relationships as being very cold. It's not a bad thing. It's just you don't have that emotional intelligence aspect, kind of like Amelia with the more aggressive aspects, where it comes to showing that love, emotional things, it takes you a little bit more time to kind of get out of the box. And you're also somebody that's about the actions versus the verbalizing. So it's not like, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's more, let me show you I love you by let's go for a walk and have a picnic. Let's do an activity or an action.
Mm-hmm.
And that really shows because Venus and Capricorn connection in the seventh house.
Okay. Yeah. All that makes sense. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. That's a really good place to have Venus though. Venus is probably one of the, it's considered the minor benefic or the minor good planet. So Jupiter is like the big good planet. And then mm-hmm. Venus is like the minor good planet. And then Saturn is like the big, big bad planet. And when I say good or bad, I don't really mean good or bad, but it's like the big bad. They call it the great malefic. And Mars is the minor or lesser malefic. So like the minor bad one. But Venus isn't a good place for a relationship for you. That's a really good placement. And Venus
my husband will be so happy to hear that.
Yeah. And in your transits, I did pull up you don't really have any amazing transits going on with Venus. Nothing that was really all that shocking, but if I look at
what's a transit?
So a transit is, remember how I was saying your birth chart is like that snapshot?
Mm-hmm.
The planets keep moving.
Yep.
And you look at the planets, like I pulled your transits for the month of February. So where the planets are now in comparison to where they were the day you took your first breath.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So for you, your Venus is also in the seventh house. So Venus is now in the seventh house for you. So this year is going to be a big year for you regarding your romantic relationships. And it's back in that house of Capricorn, in that area of Capricorn. So be careful with being a little cold with your relationship. Try to warm it up a little bit and do some type of activities that revolve around your relationship, which is great because we have Valentine's Day right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So yeah, mm-hmm. It's actually a really nice placement for you right now.
Yay.
And it is conjunct the moon. Your Venus in your natal chart, your birth chart, is conjunct the moon, which means a lot of your emotional stability, a lot of the emotional things that are involved in who you are connected to where your moon is. It's an out of sign conjunction, which just means that the moon's in one sign and Venus is in another sign. So it makes it a little bit funky, but it has that weird balance between the eighth house, which is the house of death and taxes, and couples money, emotional connections to couples money, and Venus being in the seventh house of that commitment area. So just be aware there may be some funky things that go on during the month of February that revolve around combined income, combined bank accounts, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Nothing bad. Just be more aware of joint accounts and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So what would it mean if someone had like a Venus in Virgo?
In what house?
Seven.
Venus is in seventh house for you as well? Very nice. So is there any other planets around Venus?
No.
Perfect. So again, everything kind of applies to you as well, except for I like to give little nicknames to most of the signs. And for me, the sign of Virgo is the sign of the spreadsheet. Okay. Virgo is that planet of like, there's data and your emotions and your relationships are based on data. So it's a pros and cons list. There is check, this is a good thing. Check, this is a bad thing. Check, this is a good thing. So you look at a lot of data and you analyze a lot of data when it comes to your relationships and to your emotions around relationships. But being in the seventh house is again, it's a good placement for Venus. It means, stability. It means desiring and pulling in relationships. Virgo tends to be a little bit more of a faster pace earth sign than Capricorn, though. So it's a little bit more like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this happen. And I'm going to get this. But again, Venus draws in rather than it's rather than you going out. Like it's not there's a natural attraction there, immediate natural attraction. And it's happy. It's in a happy place there. It's not a bad place. Let me just double check the detriment of. Virgo, Venus is in fall in relationships and in Virgo. That's not a bad thing. Fall just means when a planet is in fall or detriment, it just means things go a little bit slower. So relationships are not fast for you. They're not speedy, but because Virgo has that, like, I'm going to jump in, I'm going to make this happen. When it does happen, it goes quick. Whereas like when it starts, it's like you could have a stagnant period for a long time. And then all of a sudden,
you get engaged after 6 months.
I didn't even think of that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you're planning a wedding for 8 months later.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
May 1st.
Very, very cool. Mm-hmm. May 1st, Beltane, May Day. Beltane. That's all.
That's when we're doing it. Very excited.
Yeah.
Hooray, hooray. It's the 1st of May. The outdoor picnics start today.
That's a good one. Yeah.
we'll be saying that, but we'll be saying the other version at your wedding.
No, we won't. Okay. Definitely won't.
Too funny.
Oh, come on. It's going to be an outdoor ceremony. There'll be woods right there.
Cool.
It's not like your dad will be standing there.
But
my Russian in-laws will, and they don't need to know that about us.
May Day is the traditional day in most pagan religions of copulation and the union of the divine feminine and divine masculine. Even if you look at maypoles, right? What is a maypole but a giant phallus with a circle of flowers, which represents the yoni, and it's about bringing fertility and life to the world. And this is a symbol of bringing fertility into your life. I think that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Yay! Thank you.
So we're gonna sing the song.
Beth is my maid of honor. It's a big thing.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
We're very excited.
Definitely do Hall and Toe. Have you ever heard Hall and Toe?
No.
It is a traditional song sung on May Day by the Morris dancers in Britain. And it's the song that they sing the sun as it rises up. And it's a very a lot of people in pagan religions and Celtic religions are really, Celtic Reconstructionism are really into it. And there's also a couple of really good songs, the Padstow song, which is a part of England, where they still have a May Day festival where they go around with a hobby horse and they try to catch the women. And if you get caught underneath the skirts of the hobby horse, you're supposed to be pregnant for the year and all of that. There's a lot of really cool festivals that happen on May 1st.
That is awesome. Very yeah. cool. Yeah. I'm looking to some of those for sure.
Definitely.
Are you going to sing us one of those songs?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I am tone deaf like you would not believe.
I don't believe that. I would imagine you'd be quite a good singer.
Oh, I am horrible. Horrible.
Okay. I have a question. Yes. How come our astrology, and I don't want to like get into the, I'm not being political right now. This is a real question and I just need to ask it. How come our astrology starts at the point of birth and not the point of like conception?
There's different forms of astrology that does that. I'm going to probably go too deep into this question, but there was a Neoplatonist, or not even a Neoplatonist, a Platonist named Iamblichus. And Iamblichus said, as we fall from the divine creator, we fall into and get wardrobes from the seven wanderers, which are the planets. And once we are conceived and we take that breath of life is when the spirit enters us. And that's why astrology, this form of astrology, doesn't take into consideration that 9 to 10 month period that you're in gestation. Tropical astrology, Western astrology, takes it and looks at that breath of life as being the union of your creation. You are now a physical being versus being attached to, you know, that symbiotic thing, being attached to somebody else. You are now your own breathing person.
I mean, it could also come down to just the fact that it's a lot easier to tell the date that someone was born than the date someone was conceived.
Very true. Yeah. But there are versions of Vedic astrology, some other sidereal astrology. They do look at that stuff a little bit more in depth and look at, you know, during gestation, based on the day they were born, they can work it back and go, okay, most pregnancies are really 9.5 to 10 months. So let's look at where that is and figure it out. So no, there's definitely people that do that type of astrology. It's just not the type of astrology we do. And it does come down to that idea of the breath of life and falling from the divine creator and collecting those wardrobes, which is really just a fancy way of saying we get clothed by the energy of each planet as we fall from the divine creator. And when we're birthed, we take in the spirit of life of Earth, which is where we live.
Cool.
Yeah. I like that.
I have another question. Yeah. So I know it's not super relevant to me right now but like we talked about, I got engaged real fast. So it was pretty relevant to me a year ago, and I'm sure it's relevant to a lot of our listeners. And that is, you know, when we talk about, you know, people always look at their horoscopes and always look at their sun signs to see if they're compatible with other people, right? Mm-hmm. Like romantically. Should we be looking at sun signs, or should we all be looking at some other placement on our charts?
Good question. Very good question. If I'm doing compatibility and I'm looking at who's compatible with who, I want to look at the seventh house. I want to see where what works for me, because the seventh house isn't just partnership and doesn't just say about your potential of partnership. It also can tell you what you're looking for in partnership. Do you know what I mean? And then I'd want to look at their seventh house. I would also probably look at that helmsman or the ruler of the rising sign in both people as well. And then the last thing is I would look for the aspects that are connected to Venus, that rising sign planet, and anything that was in the seventh house. So it's really to look at just like you're, you know, somebody's in Aries and Aries and Libra don't go good together or whatever. You know what I mean? I think that that's too superficial. There needs to be a little bit more depth to it. So you can say, okay, somebody has Mars in the seventh house and that is Taurus, right? And Taurus and Mars don't necessarily get along. There's a little bit of a difficulty there. So if you have Taurus and Mars there, that might be difficulty in relationships or an aggressive relationship. So you need somebody that can still withstand some of that aggression. So it's really more multi-layered than somebody has a sun sign here and somebody has a sun sign there. It's just, that's too basic. It doesn't look at the whole person. It looks at just the internal workings. Do you know what I mean? Because that sun is really like your core. And if you're looking for somebody else and you're looking for their core, you have to get past who they are presenting first to find out what their core is. And that doesn't really necessarily solely speak to them as an emotional person, them as a rational thinker, them as a provider. I mean, there's multiple layers to that. You know, I would definitely look at seventh house placements for both people, and specifically the sign of the seventh house, on the cusp of the seventh house.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so just to summarize that, everybody should go to astro.com and input their birth date, time, and place of them and their prospective partner.
Correct, yeah.
And then look at the seventh house.
The seventh house.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
And see if those two are compatible with each other.
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. That's when you can go back to the idea that, what did you say, that Aries and Libra don't get along?
I was just using that as a quick example, but like, yeah, if people that say like, oh, I'm a Taurus and, you know, the only sign I should really be looking for is a Cancerian because we're really compatible. It limits it because that Cancerian could have a Aries rising and Aries is ruled by Mars and Mars is not compatible with a Venus rising sign. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just because Venus and Mars, you know, it's not that they don't get along, but Mars doesn't do as well in the sign of Taurus, you know, and it feels uncomfortable there. So it's really more in depth than that. But if you're really going to look at partnership and relationship, you can look at the qualities that you're looking for and your personality within relationship in that seventh house. Mm-hmm. And if it's telling you like you should be with somebody that is a good communicator, like if you have a Mercury in your seventh house, you need somebody that you can talk to. Or if you have Venus, which is that planet of touch, smell, taste, all those luxuries, the finer things, you might need somebody that dotes on you a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? Somebody that makes you the center. If you have the sun there, you're somebody that needs to have, you know, you need to be wearing, for lack of a better terms and not in a sexist way at all, but like the pants or be the leader within the relationships. You might need somebody that has a little bit more of a subservient type of personality, or it could be vice versa. You need somebody that really takes charge. You know what I mean? So it looking at the placement of the planets and even just the sign of the seventh house is a little bit more telling for me than just sun sign compatibility.
That's a great question, Amelia.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. Are you guys doing these for people at Pentagram?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. I actually have done 3 Zoom readings for in the past few days. For Masonic, I did one from a Masonic lodge out in California a few nights ago where they wanted to look at a chart for their lodge and see how their lodge is doing. And, you know,
that was my next question. Sorry.
Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. This within astrology, specifically within traditional astrology, which is really what I focus on, there are branches of types of astrology. So, like, there's nativity or natal astrology, which looks at the nativity of anything. So buying a house or, you know, any of that stuff, it looks at people. There's electional astrology, which is perfect example. I want to get married. Tell me when there's a good, auspicious, happy day for a wedding. So then you do a chart and you look at all of the aspects and the planet placements for the proper time to get married. Then there is Then there is horary astrology, which is probably the most divinatory astrology out of all of them, where you have a question, one question that's burning question that you really focus on. You come to an astrologer at the time that you express that question to the astrologer and it's perceived. The astrologer will write down the time, the location, the you know, exact minute, and pull a chart and give you a answer for that, you know, question. And then there's mundane astrology, which I way beyond my understanding. Excuse me. And that's kind of like Nostradamus. It's world events. It's, you know, and there are a lot of great mundane astrologers, but they're looking at, you know, presidential elections, natural disasters and big, you know, big events in this world. And it's very, very intense. It's very in depth. And it's just something I haven't studied. I've done a little bit of horary where, you know, looking at questions. Electional is a little bit beyond my grasp somewhat. Natal is where I feel the most confident. Transits, I don't do as much with progressions, but transits. So yeah, that's the real branches of astrology. Then you can go on to modern astrology, which is very psychological based. It's all based on psychological profiling versus traditional, which is a little bit more actions. And, you know, it's a little bit more defined yeses and nos, and this is good and this is bad. Whereas modern astrology takes into account the psychological aspects of a lot of things. Not that traditional doesn't either, but it's a little different there. And then there's evolutionary astrology. I mean, we could go on and on for all the different types, but those four are the main ones: electional, horary, mundane, and natal.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hang on. I just have to make a couple of comments that I may cut out later. But first of all, Amelia, you Tim was saying something about, you know, yeah, I just did a reading for a Masonic lodge, and you were like, ooh, that was my next question. What? What was going on with this Masonic lodge?
No, not in a Masonic lodge, but like, can like a business or something like that, do they get their own charts?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because you were doing it for like the lodge. Not everyone inside the lodge, but the actual lodge, right?
The lodge itself, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And it gives you an overview of like what they'll achieve, what they have problems with, where they can do better, or what, you know, what comes easily for them. Yeah.
Yeah. I just realized my business is a Gemini, so that makes a lot of sense.
Gemini's not bad. That's not everybody poo-poos Gemini and Scorpio, mm-hmm. Which I find so interesting. Because they're not bad. They're not necessarily difficult. I find, and no offense, Beth, I find Aquarius conceptually the hardest to wrap my head around. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just,
I totally agree.
No offense taken. I didn't choose when to be born.
Yeah, no. But it's just, Aquarius is a fixed sign. So they're supposed to have like this stability and like this, but they're also like these, they're very structured to irrational ways of thinking, if that makes sense. So they're like super structured to them, but they're irrational. It's almost like, if you did something that was very, very odd and you were extremely passionate about it and everybody else was like, well, that's kind of interesting or odd, you wouldn't care. It would just be your focus. I don't even know how to explain it. It's just irrational thought processes, but in a structured way. It's just hard.
I don't have any irrational thought processes. They're all rational to me.
To you. Right.
They all make total sense to me.
Yeah.
The rest of you weirdos, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was, you called it the mundane astrology is the one that's looking at like the whole world stuff. I just thought it was so interesting that the term for that is mundane, like, mundane. Which yeah. usually means just boring and, you know, like, well, yeah. But no, that would not be, you yeah. know, boring or small or.
No, not at all.
So
I didn't really realize enough about mundane astrology until this last year. I would say until 2019. So I'm always really into, and they're never right, but I'm always really into world predictions. Mm-hmm. I like study them. I've spent way too much money reaching out to people who do them. And I think it's great. I don't know what it is. I just love it. But one thing I noticed in 2019 is all these astrologers started being like, 2020, watch out.
Oh, yeah.
Watch out, 2020. Guess what? Summer 2020, we're going to have race riots. Guess what? Like, this is going to happen in 2020. Election's going to get disputed, all this other stuff. Like, yeah. They kept saying it. And then 2020 hit, and I was like, oh my God, astrology is real.
Yeah.
Like
there's actually a few charts, if you go online, where specific conjunctions to Saturn peaked at the same exact days where COVID had its highest peaks. And then there's also, Uranus conjunctions that were going on that peaked during the Black Lives Matter riots and anti-mask riots and all of those things that were going on. It's that social upheaval that was happening, which was happening at the same exact time. I mean, literally mapped to the minute of those time periods. And when you're looking at it from as an astrologer or at an astrological point of view, you're like, okay, there's some craziness coming here, but you don't, you can say it's social upheaval or it's health related things. I mean, 500 years ago, not 500 years ago. I don't remember the exact date, but we had very similar, Spanish flu had very similar astrological correspondence to the same time as COVID. But then we go back even further and we have the Black Plague, the bubonic plague that was going on and similar type of correspondence and conjunctions as well. So it all kind of ties together. You know what I mean? It's all that synchronicity that you're like, oh my God, this is this is real. And that's what really triggers it for me. When I look at somebody's chart and I look at, you know, Beth has a midheaven as Pisces in the ninth house, right? Your midheaven is, that's great. That's amazing.
That's great. Yay.
Yay! But the funny thing is, I know you, right? I know you through this podcast. Mm-hmm. And the ninth house is the house of, you know, travel and higher thought processes and teaching and faith and spirituality. But a lot of it is that teaching aspect of it. It's all about education, right? And you have Pisces there, which gives you a very natural intuition and confidence in your career, because the midheaven is your career placement. Earlier in life, you could have had you could have been a little bit unsure of what you wanted to do, and you could have tossed back and forth, but you settle into areas that are really good for like psychology, counseling, teaching, humanitarian type things. And there's this really good connection to Venus. You have a sextile or an aspect to Venus, making you naturally strong and have a strong magnetism to anything that ties you to drawing people in and having people interested and engaged with you. You know what I mean? And just
I like to perform.
Yeah, just through this podcast, it's you know what I've learned from you is that is a big part of who you are. That ninth house is one of my favorite houses for you. You know, you have some really good things there.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's just those like little things where I look at it and I'm like, oh my God, this, I guess I almost swore. I'm sorry. This crap is real. You know what I mean? And it is. I mean, people have been looking at these planets and these areas of the, you know, heavens and how they correlate to how the crops grow and how people interact and social things and how people feel for 5,000 years. The mm-hmm. earliest civilization in the Fertile Crescent, there's tablets of them making astrological correspondence. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, the only thing that, you know, the ancient people had to do after the sun went down was look at the stars.
Exactly.
So yeah,
exactly.
Of course they spent a lot of time trying to figure out what do they all mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's.
And then
it's a really old art.
And we get these archetypes that are connected to all of them too. You know what I mean? Like you have the sun in the eighth house, right? The sun is the father. It's that leadership role. It's all of that. And it's in the eighth house of, you know, death and psychology, psyche and all of these things. And it makes you go, okay, this is an area where your father has an important role or has something that it's teaching you or something that you're understanding or conceptualizing. Do you know what I mean? Like there's all these things that are going on in your chart that really make you think like, that really is how I perceive you as an outsider, you know?
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I am perceived accurately.
Yeah. Yeah. you do have some really good things in here. I will say on your exact birthday, you will be changing out of being in having Venus activated. And that, which means Venus is the planet that kind of comes to life this past year. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be moving into Mars being activated.
So I should be looking forward to a fight?
No, not necessarily a fight. You have your Mars in the sign of Aquarius in the eighth house. You have a very heavy eighth house. You have a lot of planets.
And that's my death and taxes house.
Death and taxes. So you have Mars is fast. So you have a lot of ideas that move very fast through your mind. You are quick to action with a lot of things. You're quick-witted, very, very quick-witted. Interest in literature, philosophy, science, you do need to be a little bit more careful with those joint accounts with Mars being activated there. So taxes, debt, anything that's coming up, once you hit your birthday, not that it's bad, but just keep an eye on anything that has to do with money owed. Is something that I would keep an eye on. But having Mars in Aquarius too, you have a strong fighting will for the underdog. You are the humanitarian. Aquarius has a very human aspect or humanism aspect to it. So you are that fighter for the human, you know, like the underdog is somebody that you look towards and you're like, I'm going to build them up in some way.
Amelia's making faces like I don't do that, but actually I do usually, I take the points. No, I do. Not, you know, football cards, those are, you're not supposed to bet on them and they're just for entertainment purposes. But yeah, I always take the points.
And it might not have been a big part of your personality as of yet, because Mars gets activated on your birthday. So it may be something that changes your personality as well moving forward.
Well, especially now that you've told me that, I of course will have to root for the underdog.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right.
Yeah.
Do I have anything bad in there other than watch out for my bank accounts? But
you have Saturn in Libra in the fourth house. And I already talked about how you need to have your home life in order for mm-hmm. you to feel comfortable outside the house and be able to focus. Your relationship is your extreme, is very important for you. You don't always express your opinions though, because it's the darker part of the area. And this is in your home. This is not out in your day-to-day life. This is in your home life.
That makes more sense.
You could have some really crappy thing go on or feel really crappy about it, and you'll brute and kind of hold on to it for a period of time.
No, not me.
Far, and then it's like an explosion. That could be a little bit of a crappy situation. What else do I have? You have.
It almost seems like I might hold a grudge or something.
You do. Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm pretty much.
That's holding a grudge?
No.
Yeah.
Not me.
Specifically related, specifically more with family and people around you that you feel a strong connection to. If it's somebody that you don't care enough about because you have that Saturn where you're like, I don't care about you, it's not going to bother you as much, you just cut them off or cut them out of your life because you have Saturn in that area. But if it's somebody that you truly care about, you could hold on to something where you could not talk to somebody for years because
Beth?
That's not I have no idea what for you're years? Talking about. It's not like there are several of my family members that we're not on speaking terms and haven't been for years.
Yeah, there you go. You know,
Tim Regan, ladies and gentlemen, he is always spot on.
So yeah, I actually have to tell you guys, I have a reading tomorrow mm-hmm. from somebody who found me through the podcast. And hey, this is like the fifth or sixth person that has come into the shop and has said, I listen to you on the podcast, and Amelia, and I love it, and Beth, and I love this and all of that. And they come and get readings with me. And tomorrow a woman's interviewing me. For, I believe it's, I don't quote me, but I believe it's for a college paper that she's doing. And she specifically was reaching out to me because she listens to this podcast. So,
and reading that's amazing.
11:30. So
can you tell, do you know what college she goes to?
I do not. I know her first name. I don't know if it's okay. Just, I don't think it would be a problem not giving her last name, but I can shout out to Stephanie, I guess, if you want.
Yay, so, Stephanie!
Yay, Stephanie! Yay. That's really great. I'm glad that people are reaching out, because I tell people all the time how great you are.
Thank you. I'm
like, you're like spot on. Whenever I talk to you, you have like this, and they're all absolutely right.
Oh, yeah. Cool, thanks.
Donna from Connecticut, she said that she went to your store and visited. One of our listeners, her name's Donna.
Yay, Donna from Connecticut.
Hey, yay. Yeah, so I apologize. I have not made it up. I am a very scared of COVID person.
Yeah.
But I did call in for a reading, and someone who works there gave me a wonderful reading. Yeah. It was really, really nice. So if anyone listening is like me and you're like kind of agoraphobic all of a sudden, give them a call, because there's so much you can do over the phone.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I will tell you, all of the readers that we have are all people that Leanne and I have sat down with and like really built relationships with and understand. And they all do their psychic readings in different ways. And I like the variety. So people are going to be drawn or interested in different styles, different techniques, different things. You know what I mean? Not everybody does just tarot. We have scrying, we have astrology, we have mediumship, and we do all of those things. And it's great to have us. I have never worked in a place where we're all like super happy. No offense to any place that I've worked. I've enjoyed them all, but we're like super happy, and we're all kind of like in this place where we're all like family, and we're buying lunch for each other, and we, you know, we go and get COVID tested together down the end of the street every week, and we do all these things, right? And we're now building this like relationship with these people, and like it's really cool. I'm loving it. I'm super loving it.
That's terrific. That's really like so great.
So thank you so much, Tim, for coming with us today and being on episode 1, season 4.
Yay.
And giving Beth her birth chart and everything else. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Everything is terrific in my birth chart. Everything is terrific with Tim's business. Everything is terrific with Amelia's new job. Yeah. Season 4 is going to be a great year.
It is. And 4 is a great number because it's ruled by Jupiter, which is all about big and positivity and expansion. So,
yay!
This is great. All right. So if you want to get in touch with Tim, he's going to tell you his contact information right now.
Yes, you can find us in on Derby Street in Salem, Massachusetts, which is really Liberty Street next to Paprika Grill. Or you can go to pentagramsalem.com, or you can give us a call at 978-224-2925.
Perfect.
You're on the Facebook and you're on Instagram, and do you Twitter?
I do not Twitter.
You're not Twitter. Okay.
Thankfully, we have Leanne who does the Insta thingamabobber.
Okay.
And she does a lot of the faces of books and all of that stuff.
Okay.
I am not probably the person that will respond to a lot of that stuff. It takes me a few days, but Leanne is on top of the social media stuff. So, yeah.
That's all right. Amelia does all our social media stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I'm also a podcast person too. Like, not even I listen to podcasts probably more than I didn't own a TV until December of 2020.
What's your favorite podcast?
Your podcast is my
good answer.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of them though. I really do. I think that I don't listen to the news because I find it depressing. Mm. I don't listen to a lot of things, but podcasts, they get me through. I'm cleaning my house. I'll have my ear pods in and I'm just listening to podcasts all day. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. And you guys have had some great episodes. Who's the medium that you guys use? I can't remember her name, but she's
Jamie Dye.
Amazing. Really, so really, fun. Really yeah. Cool. Yeah.
She's really cool.
Yeah. She's lovely.
Yeah, super, super cool. And I get a really good vibe from her too. Like I get a really like down to earth, like I feel like we could go out and like have a drink and have a good time. Like she's just very
for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
She lives right over near you.
Does she?
Yeah. So very like cool. Like you actually could like go out and like get a drink.
Yeah.
She's not from far away.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, maybe I'll look her up. I'll do the face thingy. And
I do so enjoy having you on the podcast with us. I so enjoy talking with you and hearing all the amazing things that you have to say. Yeah. And I hope that we can definitely have you back again in the future. Please. many times. And yeah, it's always fun. And I will definitely be making my way back up to Pentagram now that the weather is getting a little bit, you know, nicer. And
yeah.
Fran may be coming. Oh, I think Amelia wants to go with me this time.
Yeah, but I'm showing you my cat.
Oh, hi, Liddy.
Liddy, say hi. Yeah, she's hi.
Does she have a bobtail or did she have an injury?
She had a little accident at 2 years old.
Oh, she's so cute.
She is so cute. She's very old now.
How old is old?
She's going to be 13 this spring.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Yeah. All my cats are, both of them, one's 14 and one's 15. But all of our cats, we take in elderly cats specifically. Mm-hmm. And 13 to me is still, they're still playful and fun. So that she has plenty of time. Yeah. We've had, my oldest cat was 22. So, you know, you got plenty of time.
Good. Okay. Sorry. Sorry for that aside. But yes. So thank you, Tim, so much. This was so fascinating. It was so interesting. As always, we got so much out of it. And thank you for indulging us and like learning just about ourselves. And thank you to all of our listeners who are always listening to us indulging ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have a great, 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 awesome season 4. I am so looking forward to it. We have a great lineup of everything we're going to do. Next week, we have our special Valentine's Day episode, so everyone can look forward to that. Okay, you can find us online at ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. It has not been updated in over a year, but maybe it will by the time you hear this. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, Instagram, ghosthuntinginnewengland, on Twitter, ghosthuntingne. We are up to 170 Twitter followers, which is amazing because before we had maybe 6. So thank you all so much for that. And if you have a Twitter, please follow us. And yeah,
Please like and subscribe. Leave us some 5-star reviews. 5 stars. 5 stars. We didn't get a single one while we were on break.
Seriously?
Not one.
Not even the fake one that I put in?
You put a fake one in. I didn't see it.
No, I didn't put one in. But yeah, leave us a review. If you have a drive-by ghosting, please email it to us, ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com, or you can slide into any of the DMs that Amelia just mentioned.
And as always,
happy hunting.